Hi, I'm Catherine Rice from NC Broadband Matters. I'm a board member and the secretary, and I'm also the community engagement manager for Ting Internet in Alexandria, Virginia. So first, happy holiday to everyone. For you diehards who are willing to share your holiday week time with us, we have a terrific webinar where Doug Dawson, the president of both NC Broadband Matters and CCG Consulting, is going to explain to us, what is BEAD anyway, and can it work for you? We ask that you hold your questions until the end. We'll have about 15 minutes of the webinar. So Doug, what does this really mean? Are these programs really going to help any of the communities that keep getting bypassed by these great government programs?
I knew you were going to ask me that. So, yes, welcome, everybody. This is Doug Dawson. I think if you watch NC Broadband Matters, you've probably heard my voice before. So let's just jump in here. So what is BEAD? BEAD is another acronym that I always have to go and look up to see what it means, but it means the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, and it was created by the Infrastructure Investment and Job Act. So that was passed about a year, I guess November of last year. It's a grant program. It's going to give out $42.45 billion for broadband infrastructure. It also includes almost another $20 billion that go for other things. So today we're just going to talk about the infrastructure piece. So there are other uses for the money. It's administered at the federal level by the NTIA. The NTIA is one of the two federal agencies that work in broadband. The other is the FCC. So Congress gave them the authority to administer this, but the grants are actually going to be handed to the states. So the NTIA, and I'll go through that process here in another slide coming up, but the NTIA has come out with the basic rules. They're going to give the money to the state. This is NC Broadband Matters, so we're mostly going to talk about North Carolina, but every single state will get money out of this, and then the state will decide who wins the grant money. So it's a federal grant, but the money is decided, the winners are decided by the state. Very unusual circumstance. So in North Carolina, it's obviously, you know, our broadband infrastructure office who also, you know, is giving out the great grants and the other state grants. So same folks. Some real basics here. So every state's guaranteed to get at least $100 million. On average, states are going to get over $700 million. We don't know how much money we're going to get yet. That's something I'll talk about in a little bit. And the reason for that is the Congress rule says there has to be a good FCC broadband map. We will use the count of unserved and underserved locations from those new maps to decide, use that to decide how much money goes to the states. If you've been following the industry at all, the FCC just came out with a new map pretty recently. It's not a very good map. And so it's more than cut out half of the places in the country that were claimed to be unserved. And so it's, instead of getting better, it's actually gotten worse. I do actually have an example of it in here, and we'll talk about how it got worse, but it also in some ways got better. It's just a very complicated process that is not going well. And if there's anything that's going to hold up the whole process even more than it has been held up, it's getting those maps right. So, so the states will get it. North Carolina will certainly get more than $100 million. We don't know that, though, because all the places that are built by the great grants might subtract from those numbers. We're just going to have to wait and see how this all falls out. So the congressional rules are complicated. I've been working in the industry forever and a day, and I've been, you know, helping folks win grants. I myself was once an ISP and won grants, and I have never seen anything like these rules, and we'll talk about how complex they are. And so Congress themselves, directly in the legislation, made complicated rules. NTIA then took those very complicated rules and made them even more complicated. And so, you know, ISPs are sitting here going, oh my heavens, what is going on today? So we're going to talk about that today, because, you know, there's some chance that the state can undo some of that complication if they decide to do so, or they can certainly, you know, still be somewhat friendly in picking the winners. I mean, there's ways that states have to work around some of the complications if they choose to do so. The grants must first be used for unserved locations. That's any place that has broadband less than 25.3 megabits per second. In North Carolina, those states are quickly dwindling. There's not many of them left, we don't think, because if we had a webinar about maybe 2 years ago, talking about the RDOF, which is an FCC program, and several ISPs, about a dozen ISPs won money, the largest being Charter, but then a lot of money went to the co-ops and stuff in the state as well. And so those grants went for those same unserved places. So we don't know how many of those are left in North Carolina. After that, it then goes for underserved locations. That's places with broadband with speeds today under 100 down and 20 megabits up. And then it also could go to anchor institutions. An anchor institution is essentially government locations, schools, libraries, firehouses, universities, you name it, city halls, all those kind of places. And then finally, if there's money left, it can go for other uses. And that's where the grant gets very interesting because, for example, the federal rules say it could go to bring broadband to underserved apartment complexes in the heart of cities. And so there's all sorts of chances, if there's money left over, that money could go to other places. Interestingly, in North Carolina, because of the great grant program, there very well may be money left here for those other uses. I mean, that's certainly not beyond the possibility. And some of the states that are very rural and states that have not had such a gigantic grant program, North Carolina, for its size, probably has the largest state grant program around. And the state's going to take care of an awful lot of those places before this BEAD grants even hit the street. So there might be some very, very interesting uses. I've talked to a lot of cities and stuff in the state who are not happy with the broadband in cities, and it's going to be very tricky rules to use it in cities, but the state's certainly going to use the money if they get it, so it's going to have to be used somewhere. Any technology deployed has to be faster than 120 megabits per second, so that really limits it to the handful of technologies. The NTIA has stated a very clear preference for fiber. They think that's the best technology for this. Anyone who builds fiber nowadays is building at least a gigabit in both directions. Most of my clients now are building 10 gigabit networks. And so the speeds have just gotten tremendously fast. It could also be used to build hybrid fiber coax. That's the technology used by the cable companies. However, all those state grants the Charter has been winning in the federal grants, they're actually using that money to build fiber also. So they still may use some of it to build in North Carolina to build, regular cable plant, but probably not, or at least not very much. They might do it in some places where it makes sense. Also, that could be used for fixed wireless technologies to have speeds above 120. And those wireless technologies have to use licensed spectrum. Licensed spectrum means you actually got spectrum awarded to you in one manner or the other from the FCC. That's very different. A lot of rural wireless uses Wi-Fi, the same Wi-Fi that you use in your house. So they use those. Those are free spectrums that anybody can use. So the federal rules say, they don't think that technology qualifies. However, that's still up to the state. That's their preference that it doesn't go there, but the state could still give it there. The state actually does not. That's not one of the rules that the state is absolutely required to comply with. And the state, there might be a few folks in the state where the absolute only way to get to them at the top of the mountain they live on is satellite or something. So the money could go to other places. Interestingly, we don't know how the states are going to deal with this because of the tiered rule above where it says unserved first, then underserved, and then other places. We don't know if that means they're going to do a round first for underserved, or in their first round, they hope everyone gets it. One of the problems that we all have with any of these grant programs is there's no guarantee that somebody's going to come to your neighborhood and ask for the money. And so that kind of implies that they're going to have to make sure that somebody has asked for money to cover all the unserved places before they can go on to other grants. Their state broadband offices are having a major discussion about that because it's one more complexity about how they roll the money out. It gets very confusing. And there's places, especially up in the mountains of North Carolina, where there could be areas where nobody does ask for it in the first round. Interestingly, the federal rules say the broadband office, if they have an area where nobody asks for it, they're allowed to go out and find somebody to do it because they're sitting on all this money they can go out. They have to actually do an RFP at first. If that doesn't work, they can just call somebody up and go, I'll give you the money if you build it. So the state has an absolute mandate to make sure that unserved places get broadband through this. And again, there may be, 300 homes in North Carolina where satellite's the only way to get to them is to give them Starlink or something. So, but they're going to make the state is supposed to make sure that everybody gets it. Every state has to file its own broadband plan. So we have the federal rules from the Congress. Then we have the doctored up version of those rules from the NTIA. Now the state has to take, and those are suggested rules, the state has to turn around and file its own broadband plan with its own grant rules, which means there's going to be 50 states, 50 different grant programs. They're all going to be similar because they're following those first two sort of federal guidelines, but every state's going to put their own twist on it. North Carolina, many states don't even have existing grant programs. So here in North Carolina, we've had grants before. We have a broadband office who knows how to do grants. We're way ahead of a lot of other states who, there's some states that haven't even hired their broadband director yet. And so, North Carolina is way far ahead of these other states. And so, but states who don't have the right people in place yet will have a really hard time coming up with a grant program. And I'll talk a little bit more about that because the public gets a role in all of this. So the timeline is slow, and this mostly came out of the federal rules. So the law was passed on November 15th of last year, so it's already been 13 months. States had to apply to be in BEAD, which is really just meant writing a letter. They've all done that. And they got a little bit of planning money out of doing that so they can help pay for the broadband office. Every state is adding staff. This is a very major grant. And there's money from the federal government to pay for that staff. And so states are all adding broadband staff. North Carolina has done that. We've actually had some of those folks on our earlier webinars here at NC Broadband Matters. So we're in the state, at least we're lucky we're getting really talented folks. Some states are having a hard time finding people who really understand broadband. And that's about as far as we've gotten in 13 months. And so, that doesn't sound like a lot of progress, but we're on the timeline that the Congress laid out. The next really important step is these clean FCC maps, because until that's done, we don't know how much money the states are going to get, and they kind of have to know how much money they're going to get to finalize their grant plan. So it's at least possible that that process could get really mucked up. The maps have some problems. I'm going to talk a little bit about there's a map challenge process that actually individuals and governments can get involved in, and we'll talk about that coming up. But until there's a happy map, that the NTIA says, okay, this is the one we're going with, that could possibly be on hold. There's a few states that have made noises like, if we don't get our fair amount of money, we're liable to sue the NTIA. And if that happens, this thing could just really get drug out in court. And so, you never know. This $42 billion is enough to get folks pretty interested in what's going on here, right? And so the maps are the next hurdle. They're certainly not ready yet. And we'll talk more about maps coming up. Then the state must propose their actual plan. And before they can do that, they have to reach out, and it says right in the congressional language, to all corners of the state. They must talk to all of the stakeholders that want to talk to them. And so they're going to have a process, and they're gearing up now at State Broadband Office to do that. They're going to reach out to local governments, counties and cities. They're going to reach out. They're probably going to want to talk to the COGS. They're going to want to talk to county communities that have a broadband committee, anyone else who wants to talk to them. In this state, there's a group that's really helping the farm workers that might want to talk to them. NC Broadband Matters may decide we want to talk to them. We don't know it. So the fact is, if you want to talk to them, they have to talk to you. And it's a very formal process. They have to write down all your questions. They have to respond to those questions in writing. And then they have to submit both the questions and an answer to the NTIA as part of filing their grant plans. And so this is the first grant in my life that local folks actually get an input on. And I think, and we'll talk more about that, I think that those inputs could be very important. And so, there is a really good chance here to get heard. Normally, it's just like, here's the grant rules. Grants are due in 90 days, and that's the first time any of us even hear about it, right? This is a very, very different process. They're going to be scouting around driving to all corners of the state. I'm sure they're going to meet with a lot of folks online like this webinar today, but that's a very labor-intensive process for the state to talk to everybody, because there's a lot of us, everybody's. So that's going to be a very, very interesting process. So that has to be done before they can file their final plan. Once they file the plan, the NTIA must approve that plan, and that's not automatic because, and we'll talk about that in a while, but if the state wants to do anything different than what the NTIA suggests, it's likely that they're going to get into negotiating, discussing what that even means. Like, you make sure that the NTIA understands what it is that the state wants to do. The rules are so complex that even if the state tries to follow it, they're probably going to be upside down on a few of them, even though they thought they were following it. The rules are truly complex. And so once that NTIA finally says, okay, North Carolina, we like your plan, they can flow 20% of the funding, however much that's going to be. And from that point, the state could start doing broadband grants. Then there's a challenge process. I'm going to talk about a current mapping challenge. There's a secondary challenge process after that first flow of money. Once that final process has been cleared, then there's the NTIA will flow the other 80% of the money. And so, again, we don't know if there's going to be one, two, or three, or four, or five rounds of grants from the states. That's going to be part of their plan to talk about how they're going to get the money out. But, you know, we're all guessing, but it would not be unlikely for, you know, North Carolina to get over $500 million. We don't know. I mean, that's just one of those big question marks, but it's not going to be an insignificant amount of money. So my guess is, looking at all these tests, all these remaining steps, assuming that we can come to some sort of resolution of the mapping, because if that doesn't happen, this thing goes on hold for a long time. But assuming that something decent happens there, I don't see any grants being awarded in 2023. I think that some of the states who are first in line, the ones who reach an agreement with the NTIA early, will probably be able to have their grant process announced and maybe even have grants filed by the end of the year. But then, you know, that's not the same thing as actually picking the winners and making those awards. So it's very likely that this process starts near the end of this year with grants and probably stretches out, you know, for another year or even a little longer to actually award all of the money, right? And so once the money is awarded, then ISPs have to go through the actual, you know, process of actually building the grants. And so that's not even on here. You know, after all this is done, then it's like any other grant, you get to build all the stuff. So this grant's costly for ISPs, and costly meaning it costs more to build networks here. It also costs more money just to make your grant application. It's just complicated. I mean, the grant application, it's hard to think that it's not going to look like a book. I mean, there's so many things that you have to answer. It's not going to be a short grant application. But to contrast it, there are states where one of my clients on the West Coast won a $20 million grant with a 20-page application, very simple application that barely did more than tell the state who they were. Because like here in North Carolina, the state already knows all the ISPs here. They don't really have to get familiar with them. And so, you know, so they sort of started with the, I know who you are, tell me what you're going to do with money. That's how a lot of state grants have been awarded. So it's a much, much simpler process. I mean, even there, it's not simple, but they're way simpler than these grants. But, you know, ISPs have to have two different rounds of irrevocable letters of credit. I'm not going to explain in detail what that is because that would be 15 minutes. But basically, a bank or somebody has to pledge that you will absolutely have the money if you're awarded the grant. And unfortunately, that costs money, especially now that interest rates are high. If you go to because when a bank gives you that, if a regular bank gives you that, that's the same as making a loan to you. They have to tie that money up on their balance sheet and they can't loan it to anybody else because that's what irrevocable means. They're going, I guarantee that, you know, this co-op, you know, I have a $10 million line of credit, and that means the bank ties up $10 million. So they charge you interest on that money. And you have to do that even to apply for the grant. Once you win the grant, you have to do a more formal letter of credit that covers you during the construction process, which could be 3 or 4 years. So very complicated. Projects over $5 million must pay prevailing wages. Prevailing wages in every state basically are set by what the union wages are in the bigger cities. So what union wages would pay in Charlotte or the Triangle? That's the same wages that would have to be paid out in the mountains or down on the coast. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Remember, this is part of the Infrastructure Jobs Act. The whole point of this is to get money into the economy. And so, they want to pay full living wages here. But for rural areas, that's probably higher than what most of the contractors would have normally have charged in the state. So it's going to cost a little more to build the fiber than it would have if this was just a normal grant or if somebody built that out of their own pocket. Contractors have to have apprenticeship programs. And whoever wrote that rule just has us scratching our heads because I don't think they know who fiber contractors are. Fiber contractors are guys that show up in truck and they build fiber. And if they have to do any paperwork, they just look at you like you just talk an alien language. And so this is not what they do. Even when the large construction companies come in, what they bring is 20 subcontractors, and those little subcontractors don't do paperwork. They just don't, they build fiber. And so that's a very, very interesting one. There could be places in the country where the contractors will just refuse to take this work because there's so many other kinds of fiber being built around the country today. So there's an environmental and historical preservation study. That's to make sure that you don't hit a new burial ground and make sure that you're not going to build fiber where there's an endangered species. It's going to make sure that you're not going to have pollution into a stream. Very normal things that almost all federal grants do. The problem is that could be a time-consuming process depending on where you want to build it. And to some degree, it's quite honestly, in most cases, a waste of money because most of the fiber networks are either going to go on poles, and you really can't mess up the environment too badly when you're putting something on a pole that's already there. Or if it's going to be buried, it's going to be buried right along the same place where those poles are usually. And those are usually streets where the ground has already been dug up to build the street. So, but every once in a while, people are building roads and they uncover, something that a historic thing there. But those unfortunately take time. So right after the awards are made, there might be 6 or 9 months where this is being done before any actual construction can start. There's also something called Build America rules. This is not just for the fiber. All the $1 trillion that were in that Jobs Act require as much as possible for everything that's being done to be done using American parts and labor and things that are made in America. Again, the whole purpose of this law was to put America to work. So, we don't want to use foreign components for the fiber network if you can buy them here in the United States. That's pretty good, except for the electronics. A lot of the electronics are not made here in the U.S. Not enough of them are made here. Almost everything, there's somebody who makes them here. But there's probably not enough made here to satisfy all these $42 billion worth of grants. So that's going to become an interesting process. The White House said a few months ago that they are not leaning towards relaxing that requirement. That's the whole point of the law in the first place. So we'll just see how that goes. From a theory, nobody's against that idea. We want the money to stay in America. So it's just a matter of if you're the guy building the network, that gets you a little worried that you might have a place where you just can't buy the things you need. So again, complicated grant rules. The NTIA prefers that if you're wealthy enough to apply for this grant and you're a pretty healthy ISP, they don't really want you to take matching funds from somebody else, like a county or a city. They want you to use your own money. And the reason for that is they want the ISP to have some skin in the game. What they don't want to see is people getting 100% grants, which means they don't have any financial penalty for walking away from the project. But that's a little different than different than the congressional rules, which very much favored matching grants. So that's one of the places NTIA sort of flipped the rule on us. You're supposed to line up your subcontractors before you even apply for the grant. And again, anyone who's worked in this field, you can't sign up contractors a year early. They're going to go, what day are you going to start? And since you don't know, they go, well, then I can't guarantee you I'm going to be there because I'm going to keep my guys busy every day. So that's a real problem. There has to be a cybersecurity plan. We have no idea what that means. We certainly don't want unsafe networks. But the reality is, I don't believe there's one example of anybody ever hacking a signal on a fiber network. It's almost impossible to do in real time, even with supercomputers. And so that, it's everything is already so secure. between your house and the world on the internet that you can't really hack that. You can hack it later where it's stored in a data center, but that's out of the control of the local ISP. The one that's really of a concern is special high cost rules. There are, the grants are up to 75% of the money, and there's a lot of places in North Carolina and most states that are that's not enough money. When you start going to the mountains, it's going to take more than a 75% grant to make it work. And that's allowable. The grants are actually allowed to go up to 100%. That's the special high cost rules. But once they do that, it triggers a bunch of new rules for the broadband office. At that point, they're supposed to consider possibly, it's up to them, but they might have to consider cheaper technologies. So if you want to build fiber, but fiber puts you over 75%, then the broadband office might come back and look at wireless or something. So it gets to be very confusing. It's going to make folks who know they're building in a high-cost area very leery, because they might, you know, one of the strategies is don't file in the first place, wait till the first guy hits the high-cost rules and then step in. I mean, this gets to be a little weird. That one rule almost makes this feel like a one-round reverse auction, which I won't explain that other than to say ISPs are very nervous about that. So there's a supply chain risk management plan. You know, if you've been on our webinars before, you know that just like a whole lot of things with the pandemic, a lot of the stuff you buy for fiber is taking pretty long time to get. We don't think that's a real problem anymore. Almost all the ISPs I know have learned how to deal with that. You order early so that it's going to show up on time. And these grants, they're such a paperwork stream that I don't think that's going to be a problem to have your stuff there when you need it, but you have to have that plan. I'm having my house rebuilt right now, and I've been on hold for 2 months waiting for floor tiles. So we know what the supply chain still does to people. So you have to use the ACP low cost plan. That's where any subscriber who's low income can get, or who participates in a bunch of federal programs like Medicaid or school lunches can get $30 off of their broadband price. There's a middle-class affordability plan, and everyone in the whole country is scratching their head because there's a low-cost plan, and we think almost everybody else is middle-class. We don't know what that means. There's a workforce continuity plan. If you don't use your union labor, how do you guarantee that your workers are going to stay with you for the 3 years? Same problem with the subcontractors. You know, that's going to be very complicated to get done. And then there's a complex ongoing reporting every 6 months that are almost as bad as the original grant application. This is not making anybody who's an ISP happy when I start reading this list out. It doesn't mean they're not going to apply for it, but mostly what happens when I'm talking to them on the phone is all I get is a whole lot of groaning. They're like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this is a lot of stuff to do to apply for this money. And this is not the whole list. This is sort of the highlights of the list. So, now, why should communities care about all this? Remember, I told you that, you know, the state is going to reach out to everybody in the state if you want to talk to them. And so the question is, why would you want to talk to them? You know, one, we're certainly hoping that this is enough money to get broadband to everybody. So that's one reason to care about it, because if this is successful, then anything that's not been covered by the state broadband grants would finally get filled in, and we would have broadband of at least 120 megabits per second from mountain to coast. And so, you know, that's what we've all been shooting for forever and a day. And so, you know, we certainly care about that. Even if you already have it at your house, you certainly think everyone in the state should have it. And so, you know, so it's really got a good goal here. With all those complexities, the goals of this grant are pretty awesome when you think about it. So, you know, the issue will be that an ISP has to step up for every square inch of where people live. And that's the place where the community should care, because certain parts of the state, there may be no one who steps up and says, I'll build this part. You know, like, oh man, those people live down in the big gullies up in the mountain. I don't want to build down there. And if no one applies for it down there, you know, I think the state needs to hear from you. We certainly need to make sure those folks get served. And so, you know, so communities who are in those situations need to care a whole lot. And again, all of the stakeholders get a formal opportunity to talk about the rules and the outcomes. So let's talk about how the communities and how you people can help. So right now there's something going on which is challenging the FCC maps. I told you those maps just came out recently. And in many cases, they're pretty dreadful, particularly in rural areas. We found like entire subdivisions that are gone. The state of Vermont, which is way smaller than North Carolina, said that about 22% of all the rural homes did not make it to the map, to their map. And so that's very troublesome for them because, remember, the number of people they count in those categories are how you're going to get the money out of the federal government. So if they undercount North Carolina's rural households, then North Carolina won't get as much money. And so, and if we do nothing, then states who do challenge the map and get the map fixed will get more money and we'll sit still and we'll get less money. So all the states are scrambling, but any government entity can jump into this challenge. Unfortunately, and it probably won't last, but they only gave a really short period of time. This is due in the second week of January. And they only gave like a 6 or 8 week window to do these challenges. And the challenges are very complicated. First, you have to digest what's in the FCC map. Then you have to suggest where things really are, including with documentation. Counties with really good GIS and with the staff who's dedicated enough to figure all this out, including the Christmas holidays, can actually get something done. I actually don't know if the state's doing a challenge for everybody. Most states are. What they're doing is going like, if you do a county challenge, feed it up through us. Well, I have to ask them that. I should have asked them that. But in any case, if a county or even a city or a piece of a county wants to go do that math, you can make sure that you're accounted properly. That's called the mapping fabric. A mapping fabric, and I'll show you an actual picture of that here in a second. Mapping fabric just puts a dot on the map for every home and business. And so this first challenge is just to say, did we get all the places counted right? Because that is the number that is used to talk about distributing the $42 billion. And so now there's also a personal challenge. Anybody can go, and I'll show you that in a while, but so I won't talk about it too much here, but you can go to the map and say, they got my house wrong. Here's what, and you can start to get that fixed. If ISPs say you have broadband and you really don't, you can finally be heard. This is the first time that we've ever had that option, and I'll talk about that when I show you the map. So there's also a state broadband survey. It's online. You'll be getting a copy of this. And I guess, Catherine, you could even put that in the chat, right? So you can just go to that map, take a speed test. There's a short survey. I did it the other day. It's pretty simple to answer. What kind of broadband do you have? You take the speed test. It gives them the results. And that starts to give the state some empirical evidence for them, because remember, there's a second round of challenges that come later next year, and so the state's going to want those kind of empirical pieces of evidence. The first challenge is more about, are the maps right? The second challenge is more about, are the speeds right? And so it's going to be a very interesting challenge. We don't know the specific rules for that, but the state has established that website, and they want as many people as possible to go take that. If you live in a rural area and you have any kind of broadband in your house, please take the speed test. That's who they really, really need to hear from. So here's a copy of the map. This is a real place. What you can see here on the left, this is close to my house. It's not where I live. I blanked out the address because I don't really want these people to know that I put them on the map here. But that's the University of North Carolina at Asheville campus, starting there where there's no 90 houses. And I just pick this neighborhood at random. You can go to the map and the federal map and you can look at your house just by typing your address in. It'll pop you down to something like this. And then what it shows you over here on the right is all the ISPs at your house. Now, the list is longer than this. So that's showing the first five people there. AT&T has fiber to that house where the blue dot is. But then there's also, you can buy satellite from Usenet. There's a cellular company, Skyrunner is a fixed wireless, then Space Exploration, that's Starlink. And then below this is another three or four places that claim to serve there. Interestingly, that house in the heart of Asheville isn't claimed by Charter. So, we always thought in the past the Charter says they serve all the cities. We've actually always known that's not true. And so there's reasons. In fact, I think today's blog? I think it is. I have a blog talking about that. I write the blog Pots and Pans by CCG. talking about how you miss, in fact, that is today's blog, talking about how these houses get missed. So they just don't get counted right. There's reasons why they might not have built there. There's, you know, half a dozen reasons I talk about in the grant. But that's, at least those folks have AT&T fiber. There's houses that, believe it or not, don't have either one of those. There's houses in the heart of Asheville who don't actually have any good broadband options. And so you can go to this map up in the upper right-hand corner. It says location challenge. You can go on there and you can go, first of all, you go, you missed my house. My house is not on there. My block, there's three houses that didn't make the map. We don't know why they're not on the map, but, you know, they're not there. You can also come in and go, AT&T says they have fiber at my house. I can't buy fiber at my house. You can come in and say, this ISP says I can buy 100 megabits per second. They're only offering me 25 megabits per second. And then, and all these challenges, the ISP has to correct their stuff or they have to dispute you. If they just say that you're right, then in the next round of the maps, they have to fix it. So your location will get fixed. And over time, this challenge is going to be forever now. This is not just for these grant purposes. This is a permanent process. And so over time, as people go on in neighborhoods, and we'll never get everybody in that neighborhood to take this, but if, you know, if 10% of them do, we start to get the true picture of what the broadband is there, right? And so this will start to really fine-tune the map. This is called crowdsourcing. The federal government has said, we trust people to know more about the internet at their house than any of these other people, right? And so over time, that's really going to clean the maps up. I think that's going to take years, but, you know, it's not really going to benefit these grants, but you should go ahead and look at your house and see what's on there. And if it's not correct, hit the location challenge. I just have to warn you, you have to give them your name and an email address or phone number because they might want to talk to you about it. So again, the fabric challenge is to actually count all those green dots I just showed you. The fabric is those green dots. So if those are, you know, if that's wrong, we can try to get that fixed. The states will certainly benefit if those are fixed. Many communities are already reporting that the fabric for their particular part of a state is really bad. So again, it has to be due by January 13th. So tell your county IT folks that they can't have Christmas off, I guess. I don't know. Well, it's on Sunday. I guess they can have it off. So mostly it's going to involve GIS data, which in North Carolina, most counties, but not all counties have good GIS data. Not everybody has it as good as others. Again, there's both an individual and a countywide challenge for that. So again, what can be challenged? The location, you missed my house. You can even challenge the address. If they have your address typed in wrong, that's not necessarily good. So, or, you know, it's the wrong place on the map. And here's the actual place where you can go to the map. So again, you, Catherine or Don, you should probably put that in the chat box. I would recommend everybody at least take a look at your house. People are finding most interesting things. One of my friends, who I do a lot of webinars with, is in Minnesota. He lives in the heart of St. Paul, Minnesota, deep down in the city, and a rural wireless carrier is claiming gigabit wireless to his house. He challenged that because he doesn't believe they're within 40 miles of his house, and they certainly can't do gigabit wireless. And so you can come on here and go, FCC, that's just wrong. And that company is either going to have to take him off the map or put the realistic speed in there because it's certainly not a gigabit. And do that sort of thing. Interestingly, a lot of the ISPs are very honest. In my house, I happen to live in a cellular hall. T-Mobile says that I can get 2/10 of a megabit. That's about right, because that's less than one bar, and that's actually all I can get on them. So it's like, wow, they got really honest here, because I couldn't actually subscribe to them in my house. So I found that to be more honest than I would ever expected them to be. That's not broadband. So again, once the challenge is filed, the ISP has 60 days. If they don't respond, that means the challenger won. They can simply do nothing. The FCC is encouraging them to say, yeah, you're right, but they don't have to do that. But if they do nothing, then the FCC expects them to change the map. If they rebut the challenge, from the day they challenge you, they have 60 days to work it out with you. And that's why they need your email or phone number. They're going to call you up or send you a letter or something and go, here's why I think you're wrong. I really can offer that at your house. You know, so that, and if you can't resolve that, believe it or not, it goes to the FCC and they're going to resolve that in 90 days. And I'll believe that when I see it, because I just can't imagine them they don't have the staff to resolve 100,000 challenges in 90 days if it ends up where people can't come to an agreement. But that's, you know, that's what it says it's going to happen. Again, we're near the end here, but why, here's your chance to influence the grant rules. You know, since they have to talk to every stakeholder, they have to hear from you. Again, submit that in writing. Probably the rules that are directly in the congressional rules very specifically can't be challenged. The state really can't do anything about those because when Congress writes those, that's the law, right? But there's a whole lot of rules that the NTIA added that can be challenged by the state, or that people can come and say, you know, we don't think you should do this, you know, state, could you please, you know, change that? So I'm recommending that every group around the state who cares about broadband, you know, ask for a challenge. But before you do that, you better know what it is you want to talk to them about, right? It doesn't do any good for them to come out to see you and you go, we'd like to have better broadband. That's not really much of an input to the state. They kind of know everybody wants that. And so what do you want to tell the state? Well, first of all, I think it's very important. This is your chance for the state to get to know your community, to get to know your neighborhood, to say, forget all these maps. Let's tell you what's going on right here in my part of the state. I know it says on here that Charter serves everybody, but let me tell you, there's three streets in a row here. They're not there. You can't buy it, or they want you, you know, they said I can get Charter, but I have to give them $5,000 to get connected, or whatever the story is. It says I can get this wireless ISP. Well, they won't come to my house. This hill's in the way. So they just need to know that. Because remember, they're going to be giving out these state grants. This is your chance to tell them about what your local needs are. So this is not really doing anything between them and the federal government. This is you getting your voice heard at the state broadband office, which I'm pretty sure that hardly anyone on this call has probably ever talked to them before. You don't really get that opportunity. So it's a really good chance to plead your case and go, here's what we need. We really appreciate you being here today. Thank you for listening to us. And they have to respond to you. And you know at that point that they really have heard you. You know, you can also talk about if the FCC maps are correct or not. You know, these challenges are not going to be happening by January 13th in most cases. And so even if they're wrong, if you don't get a challenge in, you know, let's make sure that they hear about what the real story is. And then lastly, remember all those complicated rules I talked about? You know, I'm recommending that folks talk to their ISPs, and that could be the smallest ISP in the state who's thinking about building something in your county, or Charter, whoever you think is going to go after the BEAD grants in your part of the world. All of them have things they would love to see changed in the rules. Charter has a lot of things in their rules they don't like. Little ISPs have even more things they don't like because some of those items don't hurt the big companies, they hurt the little ISPs. But everybody has a wish list, and so, you know, we're very highly recommending at least groups who are savvy enough to really talk to ISPs, say, talk to your ISPs. Say, hey, if I get a chance to talk to the state broadband office, what do you want me to tell them? You know, I mean, you have to agree with them. You may not agree with what they recommend you do. But what I've found is even the stuff that Charter wants to have changed makes a lot of sense. And so I think that the more the state hears, not just from Charter and not just from the co-op, but from the people who are going to get the broadband, some of these BEAD rules don't make any sense. The state is allowed to push back against the NTIA. If enough people tell them that we really don't think you should do A, B, and C, then I think there's a really good chance that they will go to the federal government, to the NTIA, and go, you know, we'd like to rely. When we wrote our plan, everybody in the state told us they don't want to do A, B, and C, so we didn't put them in our plan. And so you really have a chance to do that. I know that it's very policy related and it's very kind of wonky, but it's not that wonky if you talk to your ISPs because they know what they don't like here. In fact, the scary thing about the complication of these grants is a lot of small ISPs go, if these rules don't get better, I'm not even going to apply for these grants. They're just too complicated for me. And that's a real shame. We want all the ISPs in the state to have an equal chance at this money. Theoretically, the money can even go to local governments. That's problematic in North Carolina, but it's problematic in general nationwide because the way the Congress wrote the rules, it really favors ISPs with a history versus someone, anyone, a city, a county, or any ISP who wants to start now from scratch. it doesn't really favor startups at all. So it really favors folks who are proven that they already know how to do this stuff. So anyhow, BEAD's very complicated, but it's our greatest and best chance to get broadband everywhere. It's certainly going to do that. You're going to hear lots of people who are applying for the money moaning and groaning, very rightfully so. They're like, boy, I got that grant, but it cost me a pound of flesh. I'll tell you. It's going to be hard. But it's a lot of money. The money's going to eventually get built as fiber or as fixed wireless or something that's going to get to your neighborhood so that you have much better broadband. And at that point, finally, you're going to see this money at work. Unfortunately, the timeline is really slow. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of construction before 2025. And so, and then they have several more years to build. I mean, this money could finally reach some neighborhoods, 5 or 6 years after last year's starting date. Long, long, long time. But at least we know it's going to happen. North Carolina is luckier than most states in that an awful lot of these places are going to get solved by the state broadband grants that are already in process right now. And there's more of them coming up. In fact, I believe we'll be having some webinars with the state broadband office coming on to talk to you about the state grants here as they start pinning those down. The state's doing a whole lot of good things. You can say all you want about the way the state sometimes has a bunch of funny ways they look at municipal broadband, but the state really put their money behind making sure everybody gets broadband. We have, again, one of the highest amounts of money given to of any of the state broadband programs. With that, I think that there's who I am. There's me standing by a really messy set of poles here in Asheville. I'm Doug Dawson, Pots and Pans by CCG. If you're at all interested in broadband, I recommend you read that. Every day I talk about that. In fact, today I talked about the little green dots on the map. And so every day I talk about something broadband related, been doing so since 2013. Every once in a while I miss one because I forget to post it, but mostly I hit every day. With that, Catherine.
We don't know how you do that, Doug. Honest to God, I am, you're the first blog I read every morning. It's like my hello. So thank you so much, Doug. I have to tell you, I feel like you've taken me on this emotional roller coaster listening to everything about these grants. It's really hard to imagine that even the big ISPs would want to file for these grants with the kind of extraordinary complications and the amount of time that these things are going to take. Do you really think that they're going to end up filing for them? Because it really looks like a lot of barriers.
There is a lot of barriers. And so the answer is it's going to depend on the state. First off, it's going to depend what's left over. If the state broadband grants cover an awful lot of the state, we're just left with these little pockets. It might be hard to find somebody to file for some of them. So there might be areas where nobody asks for the money, but then the state can go out and find somebody. The good news of this is they go, well, nobody applied for this neighborhood. And then they go out and find somebody. And at that point, I think they can even give them more than 100%. They can say, look, I need somebody to build this neighborhood. What's it going to cost me, right? So I think that it's going to do good there. But yes, I've talked to I'm not going to mention the state, but I had a similar call with all the ILECs in one state. That's the telephone companies, the little ones. They are thinking of not applying for these grants in that entire state. So it's very possible. That doesn't mean they won't. Right now, when they see this, they go, oh, that's not for us, right? It doesn't mean they won't do it. But we know the big companies are. Charter already has gone after a lot of money in two or three different grant programs, the RDOF, the state grants. So the chances are they will go after this. We know that, that the new Brightspeed, the new company that took over from CenturyLink will go after some. It's very possible that, that all the big telephone companies will likely go after some of this. They've all said they will. Certainly, as complicated as it is, I don't think this will dissuade the co-ops. They're going to go, look, this is 75% grant funding is worth putting up with all this nonsense, because they're never, ever going to get that kind of money to help to go to the truly rural places. So I believe that a lot of the places are going to get served. The problem we have, if you're, We had a webinar quite a while back talking about the broadband maps in general. There's a lot of little pockets. And so those, it's hard to put together a coherent business plan to get the 32 people. I don't care how much grant money they give you. You're like, everyone's like, well, how do I even get there? Right. And so we, unfortunately, North Carolina has a bunch of those little pockets. Most states do. But here it's complicated by the terrain. And so there's going to be places that are just going to be hard to talk anybody into doing, unless they already have a grant somewhere close to that, or they already have a network already close to that. But you know, there's a lot of places where no one is really all that close to them. North Carolina. Yeah.
It really seems that if you kind of, you pull back and you look at everything you've said, especially from the framework of like the last 20 years, and the lack of evolution until really now, that it just feels like one of the best things that's going to come out of this is the mapping. And I think that for the, if there's a message that the audience really needs to hear and really needs to share, is Doug's message about contacting the NC Broadband office, and tell them what's going on in your community. This is really, as Doug said, this is like the only time that I can ever remember hearing where they're open and they have to collect this information. And I think Doug, you know, even
well, and they say, and they say that they're really looking forward to it. They, you know, they don't know all the nooks and crannies of North Carolina.
Yeah.
I think they're very much looking forward to hearing from everybody.
And we have really good people at the NC Broadband Office. Stephanie Jane Edwards was just on the NC Digital Ag Group, and she was showing a map of, she's like, and here's a map of my childhood home. And you'll notice these two dots, and they're listed as having gigabit, I think it was gigabit symmetrical service. And she said, those two dots are sheds. And they're not, they haven't even marked my house. So that's the woman who's in charge of the mapping for the NCDIT. So, you know, with Nate Denny, with Angie Bailey, with Stephanie Jane, I mean, we've just got really good people there. And it is a chance of a lifetime, but we don't have very much time. And that was my other question to you, Doug, is like, you know, Here they're saying they need the feedback on the maps by the middle of January over a Christmas and New Year's holiday. It looks like the challenges on the maps, if you add all that time up, it's like 7 months. So how can we be hearing the NTIA saying they're going to start giving money out in June?
I don't know. Well, the state of Texas is already threatening to sue the FCC about this. And so they're saying, look, we need more time. And if they file a lawsuit before January 13th, a court's going to give them more time.
The whole
time.
Thing's going to be.
That's a ridiculously short time frame.
Yeah.
The bigger concern is that they pull the trigger on a bad map, and the big states, you know, Texas is so worried about it because Texas may get $3.5 billion out of this is the estimate. They have a lot of people without broadband there. Big state and a lot of it very rural, right? And so they're very concerned that they're not going to get their fair share because the maps are so bad. And so if they sue the NTIA about the whole timeline because the maps are bad, this thing could take a year to get the maps.
Yeah, it's going
to
drag out.
It could. That's the one item left on the list that's a big unknown, and it could be a very ugly unknown. But the fact is the current maps are pretty bad. Again, what happened is a lot of ISPs, the maps have the green dots, which are good. As you said, you know, her house wasn't on there, but her sheds.
But the sheds were.
but you know, but the speeds could still be terribly wrong. And it said she had gigabit broadband. She probably may not even have DSL, right? So that's the parts that are bad right now, and that's the parts that are used to distribute the money. And right now, the state challenge that's going on by the 13th is not about the speeds. It's just about the dots.
Just about the sheds.
And so, unfortunately, the number of people in the whole United States who the federal government thinks doesn't have good broadband dropped dramatically with these new maps, because a lot of ISPs came in and, just say the right word, they lied about the speeds. I'm delivering gigabit broadband there. Well, like, no, you're not actually at my house at all. What are you talking about? So you know, that unfortunately is, you know, that might be the reason that these maps get successfully challenged in court. That would be very ugly. It'd be very ugly, but at least we'll get it right if that happens. So
we have one question that came in. Does the FCC really consider satellite 25.3 as served?
No.
The person says, I see so many locations listed as served because of satellite internet. This seems completely wrong because of the limited usage related to satellite internet. Can I challenge on this ground?
No, we don't know what the FCC thinks. When they go out to do a broadband map, remember, the FCC only uses the broadband maps to report to Congress. They're required by law once a year to tell Congress the state of broadband. They may decide that that's broadband. These grants do not consider satellites. These grants do not consider fixed wireless that uses unlicensed spectrum. So even though the BEAD grants are not going to be considering the satellite speeds. So now, when the FCC goes to Congress and says, you know, here's how many people in Wake County don't have broadband, they may count as, we don't know what they're going to do. But that's not tied to money, so I guess we don't care all that much. So, but the answer is, at least for these grants, that's completely ignored. And every grant program is different. Remember, this is only one of a half a dozen federal grant programs. They all have a slightly different definition of what counts. So,
Doug, we're way over our time.
Are we?
It's really obvious we need to do more webinars in the coming year, and also with the NCDIT. I'm sure they're going to be doing some, and let's encourage them to do that soon so that we can get more of this information out there. But thank you for spending so much time with us today, and you're a font of wisdom and knowledge, and we wish everybody a happy holiday, I guess.
We certainly do. Happy North Carolina.
And I want one of your shirts for Christmas, Doug.
Yes.
I love the shirt you're wearing.
You need to see my shirt.
It's the teddy bear.
That's a good shirt. A lot of teddy bears. Yes.
Well, happy holiday, everybody, and thank you so much, Doug.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.